67%.
Yeah, that is a really massive number.
Right. According to the global data in our source material today, 67% of divorces happen because of a breakdown in communication.
Which I think most people would probably guess. You know, it's kind of the classic reason.
Yeah, exactly. It's a staggering number. But here is the statistic that actually stops you in your tracks.
Oh, the Stanford one.
Yes, exactly. A 2025 Stanford University study found that couples who actively use digital tools to manage their relationship report a 45% higher relationship satisfaction rate.
Compared to, like, traditional couples who don't use those tools.
Right, yeah. 45% higher. Which is just wild.
It completely upends the conventional wisdom. I mean, like, totally flips it. Yeah. We have this really entrenched cultural narrative, you know, that technology is just the ultimate relationship destroyer.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Like the smartphone glowing on the nightstand.
Exactly. Or the endless doom scrolling while your partner is trying to tell you about a hard day at work.
The worst.
Yeah.
Or like a notification ping that just shatters a deeply vulnerable moment.
We default to assuming tech is the enemy of intimacy.
And for good reason, honestly, because that is the default behavior for most of us, right? But today, we are flipping that script entirely.
We really are.
So welcome to the deep dive. We're exploring a fascinating and highly unexpected intersection today.
A really counterintuitive one for sure.
We are looking at how the very technology we blame for ruining our attention spans might actually be the ultimate tool to save our most important human connections.
And our guide for this is a deeply researched, remarkably comprehensive framework from a technology and gaming platform called Taken Game.
Which, okay, on the surface, might sound like a really strange place to get relationship advice.
Yeah, a gaming site for romance tips. It sounds weird.
I had that exact thought, like, why look to a tech site for romance? But, you know, they answer it perfectly.
They really do. They argue that technology has evolved far beyond just productivity software and entertainment.
Right. It's the infrastructure of our daily lives now.
Exactly. So the mission today is to unpack this source for you, the listener, and just bypass all the cliche, generic relationship advice you've heard 1,000 times.
Yeah, no more just communicate better fluff. We're going to uncover actionable, tech-driven frameworks that objectively improve your connection.
And the central premise here, it requires a total paradigm shift in how we view our devices. The text argues that technology is inherently neutral.
Neutral. Okay, I like that.
Yeah, it is an infrastructure system, much like a massive freeway network.
Right, okay, I see where you're going with this.
You can use a freeway to cause massive multi-car pileups if you drive recklessly and, you know, ignore the signs.
Sure.
Or you can use it to transport vital resources to your destination at record speed. The concrete itself has no morality.
That's a great point. It all depends on the traffic rules you put in place.
Exactly.
Vastly prefer that to the old peck is a tool cliche. Mm-hmm. We're moving from passive destructive technology to what the source calls constructive technology.
Constructive tech. Yeah, it's the difference between letting an algorithmic feed hijack your dopamine versus intentionally programming a system to scaffold your relationship.
Scaffold it for when your human capacities are stretched to the absolute limit.
And our capacities are profoundly stretched right now.
Oh, totally. We are asking the modern brain to operate in highly complex, perpetually stressful environments.
We expect ourselves to seamlessly manage demanding careers, optimize our physical health, navigate volatile financial markets, and then...
And then at the end of the day, flawlessly execute romantic communication.
Right. With deep empathy and zero friction, it is a biological impossibility.
It really is. So constructive technology acts as an external support structure for a biological system that is basically buckling under modern pressure.
Let's actually look under the hood of that biological system, because the source roots this entire philosophy in the neuroscience of love and connection.
Yes, they focus heavily on the concept of cognitive load.
Cognitive load theory is foundational to understanding why relationships fail in the modern era. The text points out that the average human brain makes roughly 35,000 decisions every single day.
Wait, 35,000 every day?
Every single day. Every micro choice consumes a measurable amount of glucose and mental bandwidth.
Like what to wear, how to phrase an email, navigating traffic.
Processing a news alert. Yeah, all of it.
Wow. So by the time you sit down on the couch next to your partner at 8 p.m., your brain has essentially run a marathon.
You are in a state of severe decision fatigue. And the friction occurs because a healthy romantic relationship requires high-level cognitive functioning.
Things like active listening.
Active listening, emotional regulation, suppressing defensive instincts.
Recalling the nuanced context of a story your partner told you 3 days ago.
Exactly. These are computationally heavy tasks. No. They require the prefrontal cortex to be fully engaged.
So we think about the brain like a computer. Empathy requires a massive amount of RAM, like random access memory.
That analogy perfectly captures the mechanism at play here.
If your brain's RAM is totally maxed out, running background applications, you know, trying to remember to pay the electric bill, calculating grocery lists, stressing over a deadline.
The system simply crashes when it tries to run the empathy program.
It freezes. You snap at your partner, you tune them out.
What the source is arguing is that tech serves as external hard drive space.
Outsourcing logistical, memory-based tasks to silicon and code preserve your biological RAM for actual emotional presence.
Right. The text outlines four scientific pillars for why this works. Reducing cognitive load, enhancing empathy, continuous connection, and continuous learning.
Let's focus on the cultural friction around reducing that cognitive load for a second.
Yeah, that's a big hurdle.
Because we have this highly romanticized movie script notion that if you really love someone, you will effortlessly remember every detail about them.
Right. You'll intuitively know what they need.
Yeah. You'll never forget an anniversary, and you'll always buy the perfect gift spontaneously.
It's the toxic, if they wanted to, they would mentality.
Exactly. And the source systematically dismantles that expectation. Relying on organic memory in a high-stress environment isn't a sign of deep love.
It is a profound vulnerability. Setting an automated system to manage the logistics of your relationship isn't lazy.
No, it is a strategic, responsible reallocation of mental resources.
The greatest enemy of modern romance isn't malicious neglect. It's the hubristic belief that I'll remember it later.
Oh, man, I'm so guilty of that. You notice your partner's favorite shampoo is running low. You think, I'll remember to buy that tomorrow.
And then 3 days later, they are frustrated in the shower, and a totally avoidable microfracture happens in the relationship.
But by setting an automated reminder the very second that thought occurs, you defeat the trap of organic forgetting.
You acknowledge your own cognitive limitations, which is perhaps the most mature thing you can do for a partnership.
So if freeing up cognitive load is the foundational goal, how do we actually operationalize it?
The source moves from philosophy directly into hardware and software, focusing on automating connection.
And it starts with a concept that immediately triggered my skepticism, the weekly relationship starter routine.
It is a highly structured system designed for couples who find themselves stuck in a rut of passive coexistence.
So what does it actually entail?
The text suggests setting a recurring calendar alarm on your smartwatch or phone for exactly 8 p.m. every night with a specific pre-assigned romantic task for each day of the week.
Okay, I read the schedule and my initial reaction was severe resistance. Let's look at a couple of these days.
Let's hear them.
Saturday night at 8 p.m., the alarm pings for touch and intimacy. The assignment is to walk up to your partner, give him a hug, holding for exactly 30 seconds, and say a single phrase like, I missed you today.
And Thursday is relaxation night.
Right. Thursday night pings for relaxation.
Right.
Dictating a 10-minute shared meditation. Scheduling a hug on a Saturday night via digital calendar invite feels incredibly sterile to me.
A lot of people feel that way.
Doesn't that strip all the authentic romance out of the gesture? Like, if I know my partner is only hugging me because a microchip on their wrist vibrated, how can that possibly feel meaningful?
It is the most common visceral pushback to the automation of intimacy. But we have to examine the psychology of habit formation and human inertia here.
Okay, unpack that for me.
The text addresses this by exposing a hard truth. For busy, exhausted adults, spontaneity is a complete myth.
A myth? That's harsh.
But it's true. We wait around for the perfect moment to feel romantic, but that perfect moment never arrives because the laundry is piling up and the inbox is overflowing.
We're waiting for a cinematic cue that doesn't exist in reality.
Precisely. The goal of this 8 p.m. alarm isn't to achieve cinematic perfection. The goal is to bypass the friction of initiation.
Ah, the friction, getting off the couch.
Yes, taking that first step, putting down your phone, standing up, walking across the room to initiate physical contact. That requires executive function.
It requires a burst of cognitive energy.
Exactly. When you rely on a ping from your watch, the device takes on the burden of executive function. It breaks the inertia for you.
So the tech is functioning like the starter motor in a car. It doesn't drive the car. It just gets the pistons moving when the engine is cold.
That's the exact mechanism. And neurobiology provides the ultimate defense for this scheduled hug.
Really? How so?
The human nervous system does not care why the hug started. The source notes that a 30-second sustained physical embrace releases a massive flood of oxytocin.
A bonding hormone.
Yes. Once you are 10 seconds into that embrace, the biological benefit, the lowering of cortisol, the slowing of the heart rate, the chemical bonding, it is identical to a spontaneous hug.
The hormone doesn't read the calendar invite.
Exactly. It doesn't know it was scheduled.
That reframes it completely for me.
Mm.
You are using the robotic, rigid nature of the technology to train your human hardware to be more physically affectionate.
And the text does add a caveat. This isn't meant to be a permanent, rigid lifestyle forever.
Right, the goal is to run this schedule for 30 days to build a baseline habit.
Eventually, the behavior integrates into your normal routine and you just don't need the alarm anymore.
But what happens when a scheduled hug or a shared calendar isn't enough to bridge the gap?
That's a good question.
Because a daily reminder isn't going to fix deep-seated resentment or a fundamentally flawed communication style.
No, it won't. That's where the source moves from logistical scaffolding to clinical intervention.
We transition into what the text calls the therapist in your pocket.
It tackles a massive cultural barrier right out of the gate, the profound stigma surrounding couples therapy.
Yeah, many people view walking into a therapist's office as an admission of catastrophic failure.
It's treated as a last resort, something you only do when the divorce papers are already drafted.
Which is, honestly, the worst possible time to start working on communication.
Right. So the source introduces digital app-based counseling as a low-friction entry point.
Now, to be clear, the text provides a rigid boundary here, and we should emphasize this.
Yes. An app does not replace a clinical professional in cases of severe trauma, abuse, or acute crisis.
But for the millions of couples who are slowly drifting apart due to the erosion of daily communication, these tools are highly effective.
They highlight the app Lasting, which is built entirely on the research of Dr. John Gottman.
Oh, Gottman. If you are familiar with relationship psychology, Gottman is the gold standard.
Absolutely. He ran the famous Love Lab at the University of Washington.
His methodology is fascinating. Gottman could observe a couple arguing for just 15 minutes, tracking their heart rates, blood flow, and micro-expressions, and predict with over 90% accuracy whether they would be divorced within a few years.
90%? It's almost scary. He identified the specific behavioral markers of relationship failure, what he calls the four horsemen.
Wait, what are the four horsemen again? Criticism, contempt, defensiveness.
And stonewalling.
Right, stonewalling. Yeah. So the Lasting app essentially takes decades of that peer-reviewed clinical research and gamifies it into a 5-minute daily habit.
It trains you to recognize those exact destructive patterns in your own behavior before they escalate into a massive fight.
But the concept that fascinated me the most in this section is the app Paired.
Oh, Paired is brilliant.
It operates on a brilliantly simple premise. Every day, the app sends both you and your partner a deep, psychologically targeted question. But you cannot see your partner's answer until you submit your own.
That blind submission feature is a critical piece of psychological engineering.
Why is that so important?
Because in face-to-face communication, humans are constantly subconsciously mirroring each other to avoid conflict.
Oh, right. Like if I ask you a vulnerable question and you hesitate, I might soften my stance.
Or if you look defensive, I might alter my true answer just to appease you. The blind data extraction of the app bypasses the ego entirely. It forces authentic data.
The text provides some of the questions, and they are incredibly targeted. Things like, what is your biggest unvoiced fear about our future?
Or, how exactly do you prefer to be supported after a deeply stressful day?
Think about the mechanics of that last question. If your partner comes home completely exhausted, do they want you to ask them a dozen analytical questions to solve the problem?
Do they want you to distract them with humor?
Or do they just need to sit in total silence in a dark room for 45 minutes?
Most of us are just guessing.
And when we guess wrong, the stressed partner feels either smothered or neglected, which triggers a secondary conflict.
The app removes the pressure of real-time confrontation. It acts as an impartial mediator, allowing you to calmly extract the operating manual for your partner's nervous system.
The profound insight the source offers here is about timing, right?
Yes. The absolute best time to download and use these tools is before a problem arises.
Working on communication should be proactive, like going to the gym to build muscle capacity.
Instead, our culture treats relationship work as reactive, like rushing to the emergency room only after the cardiac event has happened.
5 minutes of gamified communication training when you are happy builds the neural pathways you will desperately rely on when a crisis hits 2 years down the line.
But the text wisely notes that a relationship is just an ecosystem made of two individuals.
If the internal weather of one individual is chaotic, the whole ecosystem suffers.
Which is why it advocates for individual tracking, leading into what might be the most paradigm-shifting section of the entire deep dive.
Biological tracking as an empathy engine.
This touches on an often ignored driver of relational discord, physiological reality.
The source presents a statistic that should command everyone's attention. Couples who are mutually aware of and track hormonal cycles experience a 40% reduction in unnecessary conflicts.
Wait, a 40% drop in fighting? Purely from understanding biology?
Yeah, 40%. It is entirely logical when you look at the endocrine system.
Hormonal fluctuations profoundly impact baseline energy levels, the availability of neurotransmitters like dopamine and serotonin,
emotional regulation capacity, and stress tolerance. Yet historically, this biological reality has been shrouded in taboo.
Treated as a mystery or reduced to awful sitcom tropes.
Ignorance of this physiological baseline is a massive generator of marital friction.
So the text points to dedicated hardware and software that maps this biology. Wearables like the Oura Ring, the Temp Drop armband, or the newer Apple Watches.
I hear cycle tracking, and I usually assume it's just a calendar app. How does a piece of metal on your finger actually know what is happening with internal hormones to predict emotional states?
It comes down to tracking autonomic nervous system metrics, specifically heart rate variability, or HRV, alongside basal body temperature.
Okay, unpack HRV for me.
HRV is the variance in time between your heartbeats. During certain phases of a cycle, like the follicular phase, estrogen is high, and the parasympathetic nervous system, the rest and digest state, is dominant. Oh. In that state, HRV is higher, indicating the body is resilient to stress.
But that changes later in the cycle, right?
Yes. During the luteal phase, as progesterone rises and estrogen drops, the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight state, becomes more active. Basal body temperature rises slightly, resting heart rate goes up, and HRV plummets. The body is biologically in a state of higher stress.
So the wearable detects these subtle physiological shifts, and algorithms predict the accompanying psychological vulnerability.
Exactly.
I was trying to come up with an analogy to explain why having access to this data changes the dynamic between two people. It is essentially a highly accurate weather forecast for your partner's nervous system.
I love that, a weather forecast.
Imagine you are planning a picnic. You look outside, the sky is clear, so you pack your basket and go to the park. Suddenly, a massive, unpredicted thunderstorm rolls in.
And you're caught in it.
You get soaked, the food is ruined, and you are furious. You yell at the sky, why are you doing this? You take the weather personally.
Right.
Now imagine the exact same scenario, but you checked a weather app that morning. It said 90% chance of severe thunderstorms at 2 p.m.
You don't get angry at the sky when the rain starts.
No. You knew the front was moving in. You brought an umbrella, or you plan to eat inside.
That makes total sense.
When your partner is experiencing that biological drop in HRV and neurotransmitter availability, their stress tolerance might plummet. Without the data, you take their short temper personally.
You get defensive. You think, why are they attacking me?
But with the data, you recognize the biological weather front has arrived. Uh-huh. You don't take it personally. You just bring an emotional umbrella.
It completely neutralizes the defensive posturing. The text cites research from the University of California showing that couples who share this biological awareness feel 3 times more seen and understood in the relationship.
Because the conflict is no longer a character flaw, it's a shared physiological reality you navigate together.
The source does recognize that sharing this highly intimate data requires immense trust.
Oh, absolutely. Privacy is huge here.
It emphasizes choosing apps like Clue, specifically because it operates under strict German privacy laws and refuses to sell health data to third-party brokers.
Protecting your partner's biological data is a very real, modern form of care.
But it also provides a literal 4-step communication script for how to actually initiate this conversation without it feeling clinical or intrusive.
What's the script?
Step 1 is the scientific explanation. I found an app that helps me track the science of why my energy fluctuates.
Okay, setting the stage. What's step 2?
Step 2 is the invitation to collaborate. If you know my low energy days, you can support me better.
Step three is crucial though, right? Setting boundaries.
Yes. It is not about giving a partner a real-time invasive medical dashboard. It's framing it as a high-level heads up. I just want to give you a general idea when I might be more sensitive.
And step four is emphasizing mutual benefit. This helps you because you don't have to guess why I'm quiet, and it helps me because I don't have to exhaust myself explaining it.
It reframes biology from a source of friction into a shared collaborative project.
So tracking the biology tells us why our partner is stressed. But knowing what to actually say to them when the conflict erupts, that is a totally different skill set.
It really is.
And that brings us to the most futuristic and, frankly, mind-bending section of the text, using artificial intelligence as a relationship mediator.
The source advocates for the strategic use of large language models like Claude, ChatGPT, or Gemini, not for writing code, but for navigating deeply complex emotional conflicts.
This is the concept of the impartial third party taken to its absolute extreme.
Let's talk about the mechanism of human arguments. When couples fight, it's rarely about the actual issue.
Correct. When a disagreement escalates, the amygdala detects a threat. The body is flooded with cortisol and adrenaline.
In this state of physiological arousal, the prefrontal cortex, the part of the brain responsible for logic, empathy, and careful word choice, is essentially bypassed.
We resort to blunt defensive language. We use absolutes like you always or you never. We attack character instead of addressing the specific behavior.
An AI doesn't have an amygdala. It cannot experience physiological flooding. It simply parses syntax and sentiment.
The text provides incredibly specific prompt structures to utilize this.
One is for conflict resolution. The prompt template is, my partner and I disagree about a certain topic. I think my view is correct because of my reason. They believe their view because of their reason. As an expert relationship counselor, propose a solution where both feel validated and heard.
The example they give is a classic dispute. A couple is arguing over buying a car.
Oh, this is a great example.
The wife wants a larger SUV because they plan to have children in a few years. The husband wants to buy a small, economical sedan to save money right now.
Left to their own devices, this devolves from a logistical issue into a character assassination.
You are financially reckless versus you don't care about our future family.
By feeding the raw objective parameters into the LLM, the algorithm strips away the venom. It validates the core fear beneath both arguments.
The fear of financial instability versus the fear of lack of preparation.
Exactly. It then generates logical compromises that flooded human brains couldn't access.
Like leasing a smaller vehicle for exactly the duration until they plan to conceive.
Or calculating the monthly cost difference and automatically routing it to a future family fund.
It translates the defense into vulnerability. But the prompt that absolutely fascinated me is the five-step apology framework.
Oh, this one is powerful.
Human beings are notoriously terrible at apologizing. We offer ego-protecting non-apologies. I'm sorry you felt offended.
Which entirely shifts the blame to the other person's reaction rather than owning the action.
Or we use the infamous but clause. I'm sorry I snapped at you, but I've been really stressed at work.
The but completely negates the accountability. A genuine apology requires a suppression of the ego, which is very difficult to do when you feel exposed.
The text suggests prompting the AI. I made a mistake doing X. Help me write a five-step apology that includes acknowledgement, responsibility, regret, compensation, and a commitment to change.
When you force the algorithm to follow that rigid clinical structure, it will not allow you to insert an excuse.
It forces you to look at a comprehensive, bulletproof apology that actually validates your partner's pain.
But I want to challenge this concept for a second.
Okay, go ahead.
Imagine you are furious. You feel entirely justified in your anger. You feed your side of the argument into the AI, fully expecting it to validate you.
Right.
What happens when the impartial algorithm parses the sentiment and calmly spits back an analysis stating that you are the one being unreasonable?
That is the brutal mirror of algorithmic mediation.
Yeah, it really is.
If a human therapist tells you that you are wrong, your ego can dismiss them. You can say, the therapist just likes my partner more, or the therapist doesn't understand my nuance.
But you cannot accuse a mathematical language model of bias against your personality.
No. It is simply analyzing the linguistics of your argument and finding the logical fallacies. It forces a level of profound self-accountability that is deeply uncomfortable.
The source issues massive ethical warnings regarding AI, which are crucial to bring up.
Absolutely. Never share personally identifiable information.
No names, no specific locations, no financial figures. You must anonymize the prompts.
And more importantly, you can never use the AI to manipulate. You cannot ask it to craft an argument to make your partner concede.
The AI is an organizer of thoughts, a translator of raw emotion into constructive syntax. It is not a replacement for the human soul of the connection.
An algorithm can write the perfect apology, but you still have to look your partner in the eye, deliver the words, and genuinely mean them. The tech is the training wheels, not the bicycle.
So AI bridges the linguistic gap when our brains are too flooded to find the right words. But what happens when the gap isn't emotional, but entirely physical?
Right. Texting and video calls are incredible, but they lack the fundamental biological requirement of tactile presence.
The source addresses this reality. Modern couples endure immense physical separation.
Grueling corporate travel, long-distance relationships, conflicting shift work.
A FaceTime call engages the visual and auditory senses, but it leaves the somatosensory system, the system responsible for touch and physical proximity, completely starved.
The text highlights specific haptic hardware designed to bridge that gap. Devices like the Bond Touch Bracelet.
Where tapping your wrist sends a physical vibration and a light signal to your partner's wrist anywhere on the globe.
Or the Pillow Talk system, which uses a chest sensor to transmit your real-time heartbeat to a speaker under your partner's pillow thousands of miles away.
And then there is the Love Docs.
I thought this one was so interesting. It's a small, physical, wooden box you place on a desk. It has a chunky red heart on the front.
Right. When your partner sends a message through an app, the physical heart spins.
It keeps spinning until you walk over, open the lid, and read the screen inside.
I have to admit, looking at a spinning wooden box or a vibrating bracelet, it sounds almost painfully simple compared to the massive computational power of the LLMs we just discussed.
Yeah, it does. Why not just send a text message with a heart emoji? Why does the physical hardware matter so much?
To understand the power of these haptic devices, we have to look at the psychology of environment and context switching. Consider where a text message lives. When your partner sends you a beautiful, affirming text, it arrives on the screen of your smartphone. What else lives on that exact same screen?
Everything. Unread emails from a demanding boss, alerts from the bank about a credit card bill.
Exactly.
Notifications from a news app about global catastrophes. Calendar reminders for dental appointments.
Your partner's message of love is forced to share a digital neighborhood with your deepest professional anxieties and your existential dread.
Wow, that is a dark way to look at a smartphone, but it's true.
When you look at your phone, your brain is already bracing for stress. It is a polluted, noisy environment.
The Love Box, or the Bond Touch, operates on the philosophy of the single-purpose device.
These gadgets do not deliver emails. They do not alert you to the news.
The sole exclusive reason that wooden heart spins or that bracelet vibrates is because the person you love is thinking of you in that exact moment.
It creates a pristine sanctuary of connection, completely isolated from the chaotic noise of the smartphone.
That distinction is profound. A single-purpose physical device bypasses the anxiety of the screen. A vibration on the wrist doesn't require you to read text. It just directly stimulates the nervous system.
We have covered an absolute arsenal of tools today.
We really have. Smartwatches reducing cognitive load, rigid calendar schedules bypassing the friction of initiation,
digital therapists gamifying Gottman's research, cycle trackers acting as biological weather forecasts,
AI translating our flooded anger, and haptic devices creating physical sanctuaries.
It is an overwhelming amount of information.
But the text masterfully brings it all together with a diagnostic framework to help you figure out what you actually need, anchored by what they call the 80-20 rule.
The diagnostic approach is deeply practical. It asks you to evaluate your current baseline using a quiz with four states.
The states are champion, on the right track, needs attention, and at risk.
If you score in the champion tier, you have high connection and great communication. Your technological prescription is purely enhancement, using shared tools to maintain depth.
If you are in the needs attention tier, feeling disconnected and surface level, the prescription is intervention.
Implementing the weekly routines and utilizing the app-based daily questions to rebuild curiosity.
But I deeply respect the text for acknowledging its own absolute limit. It explicitly addresses couples who are in a state of severe crisis, the at-risk category.
Where there is beep contempt, toxicity, or a total breakdown of trust.
The boundary is clear. Technology cannot fix a shattered foundation.
You cannot put a smartwatch on a toxic dynamic and expect it to heal.
Tech is an amplifier.
It takes the intent that is already present and scales it. If the core intent is hostile, tech won't cure it.
In a true crisis, the only prescription is professional, human, clinical intervention.
For everyone else, the guiding philosophy is the 80-20 rule.
80% of your relationship must exist in the real, analog, physical world. Unbroken eye contact, shared laughter, navigating physical spaces together, raw physical touch.
Only 20% of the relationship should be digital. The AI prompts, the calendar alerts, the biological tracking, these are the scaffold. The human connection is the building. If you spend 80% of your time interacting through the screen, the technology ceases to be a bridge and becomes a barrier to hide behind.
Let's zoom out and consider the return on investment here. We spend countless hours researching the specs of a new laptop before purchasing it.
We optimize our workout routines with smart gym equipment.
We use complex software to track our investments and maximize our financial yield. We apply intense intentionality to optimizing every logistical aspect of our lives.
Yet, when it comes to the single most important metric of human happiness, the quality of our primary romantic relationship, we often leave it entirely up to chance.
Relying on exhausted organic memory and hoping for spontaneous moments of connection. The ROI on applying just a fraction of that intentional optimization to your relationship is immeasurable.
We've moved from viewing tech as the inevitable villain of intimacy to understanding it as a highly customizable exoskeleton for our emotional lives.
But the core lesson of the source material remains fiercely humanistic. Technology can remind you of an anniversary, but it cannot feel the joy of the celebration.
It can suggest the perfect words for an apology, but it cannot decide to forgive.
It can connect your heartbeat across an ocean, but it cannot love. You are the engine. The tech is just the dashboard.
As we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a provocative thought that pushes the boundaries of everything we've discussed today.
Okay, let's hear it.
We are moving into an era where artificial intelligence will not just respond to our prompts, but will actively anticipate our needs.
Right.
As machine learning algorithms become deeply integrated into our wearables, mapping our micro expressions, our heart rate variability, and our historical data. What happens when the AI becomes better at predicting your partner's emotional needs than you are?
Oh, wow. That is a heavy thought.
If an algorithm detects that your partner's stress levels are spiking before they even realize it themselves, and the AI automatically drafts the perfect comforting text message, and you simply hit send.
At what point does outsourcing the emotional labor mean we are no longer the ones doing the loving?
Exactly. If your partner feels deeply validated by an empathy generated by silicon, where does the tool end, and where does your authentic self begin?
That is the ultimate philosophical question for the future of intimacy. Chew on that question this week.
But don't let the philosophical weight of it stop you from taking immediate action.
Take just one practical tool from our deep dive today. Set one automated reminder to text your partner.
Ask them one targeted question about their biological energy. Use a single prompt to clarify a frustration.
Let the technology carry a fraction of the heavy lifting tonight so you can get back to the actual business of loving. Thanks for joining the deep dive.